This is Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow. If you wander the narrow streets of Venice, hitting dead ends at the canals, you of course realize it's like no other modern city, it's obvious, but just west of the serene civilization is one of Italy's biggest industrial areas, Porto Marghera, where the roads have names like Chemical Avenue, Oil Street, Refinery Way, and a number of the chemical plants and refineries are shuttered now. But soon, these abandoned industrial areas will be the spot for a big new green energy project. And this is going to be something interesting. It's Italy's first algae-to-electricity power plant. And the developers are hoping that the plant will produce enough electricity from the algae to power half the city of Venice. And all that with zero emissions. How do you like that? How's it going to work? Is it really feasible? That's what we're going to be talking about with my next guest, Al Darzins. He is at the National Renewable Energy Lab in Golden, Colorado. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Darzins.
Hello. Thank you.
Let's talk about the facility being planned for Venice. How do you turn algae into electricity?
Well, I mean, apparently they're going to be using a technology based from a company here in the U.S. whereby they will grow the algae in what are known as closed photobioreactors, essentially large tubes, collect the algae, remove all the water, dry the algae, and then probably gasify that algae in a system that they call plasma gasification. That generates hot gases that can be then burned, turn a turbine to generate electricity.
So they're going to turn it into biomass, basically.
Right. So they're going to grow, actually, biomass as the algae as a feedstock.
Yeah.
And then use that feedstock to actually do the gasification process.
Now, this is different. I've always heard that people want to grow algae to take biodiesel out of it, make fuel oil out of it. But this is not what they're doing.
Absolutely. This is dramatically different than really what most of the people in the world are looking at for algae. Algae are a really good source of potentially bioenergy routes. They make a lot of things like hydrogen, oil, lipids, if you will, carbohydrates, sugars, but then the biomass itself could be used as a feedstock. And so this piece that they're looking at in Italy is really kind of a small part of where the larger general interest is in algae, and that is actually on the oils that they produce.
Right. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. Also, you can tweet us at SciFry, at SCIFRI. Or join us in Second Life. You say it is different than what most people are doing, and how feasible is it then?
Well, that's the ultimate question, really, for any algae technology. It's always going to come down to cost. And so in our experience, some of the plasma gasification technologies, you know, they can be rather capital and energy intensive. You then have to figure into that the cost of growing the algae in these closed systems, which are expensive, the cost of harvesting and removing all the water, and then, in theory, drying the algae before you actually do the gasification. And so what that all entails and what that cost is going to be absolutely critical to the bottom line and whether this is cost-effective and sustainable.
Yeah, because it's going to take all that energy to dry it and do all the kinds of things you need to do.
Absolutely. And that extends to really any algal biofuels technology, whether it's producing oils for biodiesel or there are some algae that actually can produce ethanol as well. And so all the processes that go into producing those fuels, what that cost is going to be absolutely critical in the future.
Yeah, and of course, when you burn it, you're then going to produce some of the greenhouse gases themselves, right?
That's true, but I think in the process in Italy, I think they plan on reusing the CO2 to actually channel back into the growth of the algae, because the algae need nutrients, sunlight, water, and CO2 to grow.
And what is their schedule for getting this all done?
That's a really good question. I would imagine that the first thing is to generate some sort of a pilot or demonstration. I mean, it's unlikely that they'll go to full-bore commercialization. They'll probably have to start out very slowly with a pilot or demonstration a plant just to see whether this works.
You know, I've seen algae demonstration plants out in our deserts out there in the Southwest.
Right.
But Venice is not a Southwest desert.
Well, and that's absolutely critical. So where you site a particular algae facility is going to be absolutely critical. Now, in Venice, water is probably not a problem. They have a lot of water. You know, will sunlight be a problem? Again, you know, how much solar insulation do they get every year is going to be a huge issue.
1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Jim in Chicago. Hi, Jim.
I just wanted to know what company it was that produced that technology.
A good question.
I think it was a company based out of Washington called Solana, S-O-L-E-N-A.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, out of Washington, state of Washington.
I think that's correct.
Is there a lot of research going on in algae?
Oh, you would not believe the amount of research going on just over the last couple years. I mean, the Department of Energy actually funded an algae program for almost 20 years from 1979 to 96, and then they terminated the program because of budget cuts. But just over the last couple years, there has been a virtual explosion in the interest in algal biofuels. There are probably well over 100, 150, maybe as much, many as 200 companies worldwide, can you believe it, that are actually looking into commercializing algal biofuels.
Mm-hmm. Let me just correct myself. That was Washington, D.C.
Oh, was it D.C.?
Yeah, not the state. Don't listen to anything I say, because I'm going to get it. I'm going to get it wrong. But what I find interesting about this is that they're going to cultivate a species of algae that actually grows in the Venetian lagoon water, right?
Yeah. And again, when you talk to Jerry Brand next, you'll find out that there are many different algal species that have the ability to grow in fresh water. They can grow in brackish water. They can grow in seawater. And there's some organisms that can grow, like in the Great Salt Lake. And so there's a huge diversity of organisms out there that potentially you could use for algal biofuels development.
Mm-hmm. Now, some questions coming in from the Internet. One is a very simple one. Why don't you just dry it and burn it? Why do you have to go through this multi-stage process?
I think that what they want to do is generate – once you have the so-called synthetic gas or syngas, which is carbon monoxide and hydrogen, you can do a lot of things with it. You can burn it to generate the electricity, but then you can also use that to make other fuels as well. And so there's a lot of flexibility in going the gasification route.
Jeff in Portland, Oregon. Hi, welcome.
Hi. Well, thanks so much, Ira. That's an exciting program. What an exciting concept. I've heard that algae is the answer. I had a question, and you kind of addressed it about the Venice Lagoon. I'm kind of concerned in that regard. But are these going to be independent places that will be grown so there will be no spreading of algae through parts of the biosphere where we don't want it? And quickly, I mean, kind of coincidentally, I've heard also that algae is the answer when it comes to both fuel and food.
Yeah, I've heard that too. We'll talk about it a bit.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the question.
Well, to address the caller's first issue, so as far as I know, the plans, at least in Venice, are to grow the algae in these large kind of vertically standing tubes, if you will. And so they'll essentially be enclosed, and so that's really going to limit, where these algae can go in the environment. That is true for the second question. Algae can be used as both a food and fuel, but most of the fuel or food applications are grown places like California and Hawaii, where they're growing these organisms that really don't produce a lot of the oils that we're looking for biofuels.
But if you grow algae for using biofuels and taking the oil out of it, could you then not squeeze the oil out and use the other byproducts?
Absolutely. In fact, there's a lot of people that are talking, once you remove the oil, there's really a lot of high-quality protein still left in that algae meal, and so that could be fed to, for instance, cattle or other animals, and perhaps even down the road, maybe to be used for human consumption.
Yeah, it just all depends on which algae you choose.
Absolutely.
And we're going to get into that a little bit more. Thank you, Al, for taking time to be with us.
My pleasure.
Al Darzins is the Principal Group Manager of the National Bioenergy Center at the National Renewable Energy Lab in Golden, Colorado. And we're going to move on now to talk more about algae continuing in this green vein. We're going to take a look behind this organism and its developments in algal power in Venice. I talked a bit about squeezing the oil out of the algae. My next guest is something of an algae aficionado. He actually curates a collection of thousands of different kinds of algae. You got your freshwater, your saltwater, your red, your green, your yellow. He has some incubating at precise temperatures in glass tubes. He furnishes them with a steady supply of carbon dioxide-rich air. He has others, like some extreme specimens from Antarctica and the Gobi Desert, that are cryogenically preserved with liquid nitrogen. And he is an algae librarian. You know, an algae librarian can lead a lonelier life than the Maytag repairman. But lately, a throng of biotech engineers have been knocking on my next guest's door, eager to get their hands on some of these specimens for their energy projects. Jerry Brand is the director of the Culture Collection of Algae at the University of Texas at Austin. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hello, Ira.
Hi. There are a lot of folks interested now.
More than I could have imagined 2 years ago. Yes, there's a great deal of interest now.
And when do they come in, what do they ask for?
Well, the first thing they say, likely, I would say not nearly all say this, but a predominant thing to say is that, well, I prepared my facility now. All I need is the alga. Give me the algae.
Oh, it's just like baking a cake. I've got the flour. Give me the yeast. I just throw it in there.
That's kind of what I get a lot of times.
And you tell them it's not that simple.
That's exactly right.
Because?
And the reason is that different algae grow better under some conditions than other ones do. And so it depends on the conditions where they want to grow the algae. It depends on what product they want from the algae. And not only that, most kinds of algae haven't really even been researched very much in detail. So we don't even know which ones for sure have the most potential to grow vigorously, to behave well in large cultures, and to produce a lot of the products that people are interested in.
Well, how many different kinds are there?
I would say no one really knows. The estimates keep going up. Some conservative estimates say maybe less than a couple of 100,000. But others claim that there may be more than 1 million kinds of just one group of algae alone called diatoms. And so it kind of depends on how you divide them up. There's sort of almost like a continuum in the genetic contents. So when you separate one species from another, where do you draw the line? Do you divide them with based on very subtle differences in their genetic content, or do we make the breaks more broadly?
But theoretically, then, with all these different kinds, you should be able to find one for everybody.
You really would think you could. The problem is the alga does what it wants to do, not what man wants it to do. And living out in nature, it's very analogous, I would say, to growing wheat. When farmers, or let's say hunters and gatherers, first wanted to grow wheat, there was just a few stalks of this stuff, and it probably was enough to support a few people every square mile. But you had to develop new varieties, you had to learn culturing techniques, you had to learn a lot of things before you could really get wheat that was highly productive and useful to make bread and so forth.
All right. Jerry, can you hang with us there for a second?
Sure.
We're going to take a short break and come back and talk more with Jerry Brand and his algae library out there at the University of Texas at Austin, Hook'em Horns territory. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Talking algae, 1-800-989-8255, or Twitter us. Tweets can go to @SciFry. We'll be right back after this break. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking algae in anticipation of Earth Day coming up with Jerry Brand at the University of Texas, who has an algae collection. He's actually director of the culture collection of algae. Jerry, walk me through your collection. What would I see if I walked through your collection there?
Well, what you would see is transparent glass containers, test tubes, flasks, and so forth. Most of which have liquid in, some have some gelatin material called agar, and all of them are colored. And the color is due to the algae that are growing on the surface of the agar or throughout that liquid. So you see a very colorful collection of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these containers of algae of different colors. Not all algae are green. They come in a variety of different colors.
And how did you get started on this madness of collecting algae?
Well, the way I got started actually was as a physiologist interested in photosynthesis, and I realized, as others did, that algae was an ideal source for studying photosynthesis. Mm-hmm. And I ended up becoming more interested in the algae than I did the specific process, photosynthesis. And so that's how I became involved.
Wow, that's terrific. And algae can grow just about anywhere, can it?
Well, they got to have light.
Yeah.
As long as there's a source of light available, it's remarkable the diversity of places that they can grow in practically every habitat where there's light. And they can survive, in fact, up in the air, traveling for hundreds of miles through the atmosphere in resting stages or in a rather dry state. So they have different forms of existing even under very harsh conditions.
Yeah, you know, and in fact, I remember going, you know, I used to go to the zoo here in New York and see the polar bears had green fur, and I learned years later that was algae growing inside the little shafts of their fur.
That's exactly right. That's one of the interesting places you can find them. I've actually seen them under the bark of tree. If you have a young sapling that looks dark, but there's enough light gets through it that they grow right just underneath the bark of a tree where you'd never think a photosynthetic organism could grow. So you never know where you'll find them. As long as there's light, they're going to be there.
Yeah. Here's a question from Twitter. A tweet came in from M. Tatter, who wants to know, are you engineering the plants to be more efficient and reduce costs?
Many, many people are. There's one group of bacteria-like algae called cyanobacteria, and they are very much like bacteria, and it's quite easy to get genetic new genetic material into many strains of those. And so there's a number of scientists around the world who are attempting to modify those such that they grow under more favorable conditions for producing, say, a fuel, or they produce a more desirable product. And so this is something that we are doing some of, but it's being done in lots of laboratories throughout the world, probably a couple of hundred laboratories around the world.
John in Newtown, Pennsylvania. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hey, Ira. Good show.
Thanks.
I'd like to ask your guest, if you were to engineer algae, would there, you know, it's a very virulent plant. Is there a danger that the engineered algae could go wild and maybe hurt the wild algae?
Good question.
That's an extremely good question, and one that's being addressed now very seriously, since we realize in order to provide a fuel source from algae or any other commodity, we would have to grow huge amounts of it. First thing I would say is that, in my opinion, most algae are what we would call pandemic. It means that if you bring something in from a foreign place, if it's a small alga, microscopic, it's probably not, you're not going to probably introduce something foreign, something that wouldn't eventually get there anyway. But now when we're talking about genetically engineered algae, that's something different. I think there would have to be a lot of testing going on before this could be approved. This has not been adequately addressed yet, at least not not to the public. But it's something that's been very seriously discussed in meetings of those who are trying to develop biofuels and other commodities from algae. So we're well aware of the problem. The testing procedures and things that we would need to do to authorize these to be used have not been put in place yet.
See, really, it's interesting. You talked about that in relationship to when people started cultivating the grasses or wheat and had to come up with the kind of wheat they needed to eat. We're now into algae agriculture? What would be the right way to phrase that?
Well, I guess you could call it a form of agriculture. Let's see, what would be another room for it? I don't know what the
correct... Okay, let's call it. We'll create our own phrase, algae agriculture.
Here. All right, that's okay.
Yeah.
It's a kind of mariculture, I suppose, if it's marine waters you're using. And, of course, some people think of doing that in salt water and some in fresh water. So it's a kind of mariculture, I suppose. But algae agriculture is probably a much better term.
And the idea is to come up with something that we can use and harvest the best for whatever purpose we want to do with it.
That's exactly right. We would like to have an alga that's tailor-made for the specific products that we want.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that algae would be able to produce enough oil, let's say, to make a difference?
Well, theoretically, yes. Many people have done calculations that indicate that in scale, algae could make a significant dent in our fuel requirements if we can do it, as Al Darzon said a few minutes ago, if we could do it economically. And so far, there's not been any real demonstration of that, although it appears like the possible price is coming down. But it would take a lot of land. And the reason why algae are so attractive is because algae can grow in land where not much else can grow, in deserts and arid land of various conditions. And so it would take a lot of land, but it doesn't necessarily take land that's needed for other things.
Mm-hmm. One last question from Twitter. Lee Rosen writes, how much carbon can be captured in the algae energy production process?
That's a good question. Some people think that, if you put in 40% carbon dioxide, 40% of the air is carbon dioxide, and bubble it into your algae, you can do better than putting in 5%. That's not necessarily true. You're only capturing carbon as fast as the alga is growing. Mm. And I don't remember exactly what the percentage of an alga is carbon, probably in the range of 30 or 40%. So a lot of the mass of the alga goes into carbon, but you can only remove the carbon as fast as that alga is growing.
Yeah.
So if it only doubles once every day, which many of them do, that's how fast you're going to capture the carbon.
I had seen stories of pilot programs with out in the Southwest where algae were growing in a greenhouse next to a power plant, and they fed the CO2 into the greenhouse, and they said they could suck out 80% of the CO2 coming out of the stacks. But it grew so fast, you'd have to take it, like tripled overnight or something like that.
That's right, and not necessarily overnight, but over a period of the day when the photosynthesis is allowing it to grow. That's exactly right. Some tiny algae can double three times in a day. That means by nightfall, there's eight times as many as there were when the sun came up in the morning. So some small ones can reproduce very, very rapidly. And so in that case, they can capture an awful lot of CO2 during that period of time.
So scaling it up is the problem here, making sure you don't have bad algae at the bottom of a pile someplace.
Oh, that's exactly right. That is a problem.
Yeah. All right, Jerry, thank you for taking time to be with us.
That's a pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Have a good weekend.
Bye.
Jerry Brand is the director of the Culture Collection of Algae at the University of Texas at Austin.